Okay, this is sound about number 43 for Fight in the Fields of Paradigm Production, minus 8 dB reference tone to follow in the modulometer, which equals 0 VU. Okay, and we're continuing the interview with Fred Ross Jr. We're starting camera 90. Will we take number 3? Okay, we have speed.
You got
speed?
Yeah.
Rolling.
Okay, this is take 3, Fred Ross Jr., marker.
Going through the correspondence between your dad and Caesar, noticed that they talked about many, many things. What was that bond between your dad and Caesar?
Well, I think one is the historical context of the period that they were organizing in. They were organizing in the middle of the McCarthy period. So every community they would go into, there was suspicion that they would have to overcome. There would be attacks, and there would be people within their own community that would accuse Caesar and or my dad of being communists. So they were pioneers. And together, along with Dolores and Gilbert Padilla and others, they organized something like 32 chapters of the Community Service Organization here in California and in Arizona, against all odds, on a shoestring budget. So anytime you're out really in a pioneer situation, getting into a lot of fights and going up against a lot of opposition, there's a natural bond that draws you together. Caesar was my dad's best friend, and he was Caesar's first mentor. So there was that bond, and that closeness. And they knew how tough it was to go in, and they understood that all organizing is reorganizing. And I wish I could have been there. There was one time when the two of them went back into Boyle Heights, East Los Angeles, where the chapter had kind of dipped down in membership. So the two of them go back, and maybe this is like 1955 or something. And I got them both to tell me the story. But they go through the 3x5 cards. It's probably a shoebox full of the old members. And Caesar get on the phone and say, listen, this is Caesar Chavez, and Fred Ross and I are here, and we're kicking off a new organizing drive, and would you renew your membership? And as soon as, you know, Mrs. Martinez would say yes, Caesar would give my dad the card, and he'd race out and go pick up the dues. Then they'd trade off, and my dad would get on the phone. And then they'd do a house meeting drive, and all of a sudden, they'd be filling the Euclid School with 600 or 700 people. And they'd be off, you know, people begin choosing what issues they wanted to fight around and organize around. And literally, they were helping to revive one of those organizations. So it was fighting against the odds all over California when most people said it couldn't be done. They were doing it.
Now, your dad went right into the fields to organize. Did he ever tell you what went through his head when he was walking in amidst a bunch of Mexicans and Filipinos? I mean, how did he see that they reacted to him, and what did he think about going in there? Did he think about it?
Well, by the time he rejoined Caesar, because Caesar went out on his own from 62 to 65, and it wasn't until the March to Sacramento Easter of 66 that Caesar asked my dad if he would come back and lead the organizing drive and train organizers in the Valley. By 65, my dad had been working with Mexican-Americans and Filipinos and African-Americans for more than 20, 25 years. So by that time, it wasn't really an issue. But in the early days, he knew you had to go, you know, one person at a time and to win people's trust. He was very aware of it. But he also knew that the best way to do it was to be real and to be honest and be direct and to treat people the same and to expect the same from people. That if they were going to get involved in organizing, there was going to be accountability, and you're going to have to produce. And my dad was a big believer in that. He was real patient. But if people were not holding up their end of the bargain, he would lose patience. He had a saying that when somebody tells you maybe, it's just a polite way of saying triple no. So it's really it's the worst thing that somebody can tell you is maybe. So he understood human nature. And one of the things he said that fascinated him with organizing was that you're always learning something new about human nature, about what makes people tick, what motivates them, how to draw out their anger, how to get them to act on what they're angry about, how to get them to recapture that capacity to dream about how things could be if they decided to organize.
You told me one time that Caesar would call on your dad when he wanted to go to war. What did it mean? What did going to war mean?
Meant going up against the biggest and baddest, like what, DiGiorgio.
What meant that? You can quit going to war.
What going to war meant was like the Salinas strike, for example, in 1970, 25 years ago. The growers in the Salinas Valley signed overnight sweetheart contracts 48 hours after the grape contracts were signed in Delano. And Caesar called my dad and said, listen, we're about to go into a general strike across the Salinas Valley, and I need you. We're going to war. A few years earlier, it had been Jamara, the biggest grape grower in California. They were going to go on a big strike against Jamara. He asked my dad to come back. Would you help lead the strike?
So going to war, when you said going to war, was a call to arms, I guess.
Yeah, a nonviolent call to arms. We're going all out until we win. And they both had that characteristic of patience.
Now, what about you? When did you become involved in the union? What drove you to take up arms?
Well, I'd known Cesar Chavez since I was a little boy. And I was in high school. I remember a friend of mine from my school and I helped. It's like about 1963 or 64. Cesar came up and he needed help getting a printing press. That my dad helped him get. And I was fascinated by the fact that he was organizing farm workers. And in my first year of college, he came back to Syracuse. There was a National Poor People's Conference. And a few months later, he was literally leading a march through the valley up to Sacramento. And I decided that I wanted to spend my first summer after college learning how to organize. I'd spent some time with my dad in Arizona a few summers before. And I think that's when I first realized that organizing was in my blood. And here my dad was one of my heroes and Caesar was my other hero. And they both were involved in a big war against the Georgia, and I wanted a piece of the action. I wanted to see what it was like. So I went down in the summer of 1966. I found my life's work. It was a big drama. It was a real life drama. And you had the teachers on one side and you had the growers on the same side with them. And every day there was a conflict. Not violence every day, but there was some violence. But the teamster organizers would be out there and our organizers would be out there. And I found a system like the feudal system. DiGiorgio had workers segregated by race. There was a Mexican-American crew separate from a Puerto Rican crew, and there's a Filipino crew, and there was a black crew and a white crew. There was a company store, and the Puerto Ricans were the most militant. Remember, there was a woman who was their leader. And they would be penalized by DiGiorgio for being so militant, and the way that they would pay a price, they'd be sent out to the worst fields. And when you're picking piece rate, if you get sent out to fields that have been picked a few times, you're going to earn a lot less money. But I also began to see what building power was about. That it was a very slow, methodical process My dad would hold 3 meetings a day with the organizers. First thing in the morning, to plan what the organizers were going to do at noontime, because that's when you go to the fields and talk to workers during the lunch. Debrief with the organizers after noontime. Plan which workers you're going to go see in the afternoon, the early evening, in their homes or in the camps. Come back 9 or 10 o'clock at night, report back in. What happened? What are you learning? What's happening in each crew? Are we winning? Are we losing? What are the problems? What are the questions? What's working? What's the cheese mean? What's the rumor? What can we use for the tomorrow's mosquito zumbador? So I learned about the importance of detail and patience and persistence and focus. My dad, I think, was the most focused organizer I've ever met. And you need complete and total undivided attention when you're in the middle of a war. And that's what these campaigns were.
Okay, that's the end of camera roll 90, and that was take 3. Take 4 is up, and we'll be starting camera roll 91.
Last mosquito bites or whatever.
Yeah.
And rolling. Okay, Fred Ross Jr., take 4. Marker.
So 1970, you were in Salinas, and you're just fresh out of college, with 22 years old. What was that like? Head up a strike in Salinas.
Well, I wasn't heading up the Salinas strike. Caesar asked me about 10 days after I got there if I'd go down and head up the strike in Santa Maria, which was 3,500 workers, and I gulped and I said, "You think I can do it?" He said, "Yeah, you can do it." But I've never been involved in anything like Salinas. The farm workers in Salinas were already organized before we got there. They had been quietly and patiently organizing for several years. They'd been signing cards at the border, they'd been signing cards, they'd been waiting for the grape strike to get over because they wanted a union too. And they were so angry that the Teamsters had come in and signed these rotten contracts, giving them about a nickel an hour raise over 5 years, that they were just chomping at the bit to take action. So really our job was to focus and mobilize the energy and the anger. And the first thing we were doing was signing people up on new authorization cards, and there was a planned march to Hartnell College where workers would vote on a strike. So we were going, it was like coming into a revolutionary situation almost. People ready to totally overthrow the grower-dominated system. And there were these red and black and white banners all over the Salinas Valley just coming out of nowhere on backs of trucks and cars. And kind of spoiled you as an organizer. If you weren't careful, you'd think that you were such a great organizer. That's why hundreds of people were coming out. But that wasn't it. These farm workers were, this is a situation ready to explode. And it did explode. Again, the Teamsters brought out their goons, and they were packing weapons. They beat Jerry Cohen unconscious. Cohen was the chief attorney for the farm workers. Some big goon about 6'5", weighing about 300 pounds. Farm workers were being knocked around and beaten by sheriffs and Teamsters. I remember a story that my father was in a motel room with Bill Kircher, who was the director of organizing for the AFL-CIO. And the Teamsters were threatening the both of them. And luckily, the call had gone out to the Longshore Union here in San Francisco and the seafarers to bring in some reinforcements. Guys who were almost as big as the Teamsters to kind of even the odds a little bit and to lessen the chances of violence. But people's lives were in danger. And then the farm workers walked out on strike. More than 10,000 farm workers in Salinas just shut that valley down.
You had some great victories in Salinas during that period, but in 1973, things changed. What happened? What happened in 73?
Well, in 73, the grape growers stabbed the Farm Workers Union in the back. They went back to their pals, the Teamsters, and brought in the Teamsters and signed sweetheart agreements. And Gallo did too. And overnight, the membership dwindled down to next to nothing. But it provoked strikes all across California. And more than 3,500 farm workers went to jail that summer. And hundreds of religious priests and sisters and religious of all faiths, Protestant, Catholic, and Jewish. Dorothy Day came out. I remember meeting her for the first time in Delano, and someone asked her, "Why are you here?" She said, "I'm here to go to jail." And she did. She went to Fresno, and she joined hundreds of others who went to jail in solidarity with the farm workers. What was extraordinary was that at the time from 73 to 75, most of the national commentators were counting the Farm Workers Union out. I mean, there was a big article in the New York Times magazine saying, yes, Chavez is a very charismatic leader and it was a wonderful cause, but the Teamsters were just too rich and too powerful, and this cause was over. And that made a lot of farm workers and organizers real mad. And that was one of the reasons that I came up with the idea of doing a march on Gallo in 1975. Because I thought it was that we needed to do something really public and dramatic to show the world the farm workers were far from dead. And at first, most people thought, march really isn't a very good idea. But Caesar agreed with me and supported the idea. And at first, we thought we'd be lucky to get about 5,000 people to march with us. Well, by the end of that march, that went from San Francisco, and Luis Valdez and the Teatro Campesino came out, and Congressman Phil Burton and the head of the AFL-CIO, and a lot of the supporters who had been with the farm workers had an opportunity to come out and stand with them again. And farm workers came from Salinas and from Stockton and from Delano. And by the final day, more than 20,000 people from all across California flooded Modesto, the Gallo headquarters. And by that action, we got a reaction. We got two reactions. One was from Gallo. The first day of the march, they bought a big banner they put on the side of the St. Francis Hotel at Union Square where we kicked off the march. And they said, "Caesar, you're going to the wrong place. You ought to go to Sacramento and get a law." Well, that locked Gallo into a public support for free and fair elections for farm workers in the fields. Jerry Brown was looking at the situation to say, well, how much support do the farm workers still have? It was a test. Well, it was clear by the end of that march that we had a lot of support, that we were alive and kicking. And a few months later, we won historic legislation in Sacramento. And some of the growers had to support that legislation because they'd been mouthing the platitudes about free and fair elections, and they had to put up or shut up. And that was kicked off the revival of the union in the fields.
How significant was that act, the law that put into effect? What did that mean for farm workers?
Well, just as the Wagner Act for industrial labor in the 30s was the catalyst for organizing in this country, the Farm Labor Relations Act was the catalyst for organizing all across California. And I believe there were more than 400 elections in the first 12 months. And thousands of farm workers, for the first time in history, had the right to vote for the union of their choice. And through nonviolent means, the farm workers were able to kick the Teamsters out of the fields and send a message to the public and to the growers that they wanted their own union, and that was the United Farm Workers Union.
Now, in the 1980s, late 70s, early 80s, things changed, and the union pulled back on organizing. What happened? What do you see happening in the union?
Well, I think one of the things that happened was that Jerry Brown was no longer governor. And there was a hostile Republican administration led by Duke Majan and his lackeys, Sterling and others, running the Labor Relations Act. So instead of swift justice For example, when farm workers were fired unfairly, when the act was being enforced, they'd not only get their job back, but they'd get back wages. With Duke Majan, I think there was a case that it took 20 years to finally settle. Just last year, some worker finally got paid. Well, that's the kind of thing that kills your organizing drive. If people are afraid and they don't have enough reasons to hope, they're not going to organize.
So what do you think that the message Caesar got from that? I mean, but apparently the boycott continued, but the organizing didn't. Did that hurt? Did Caesar understand that? That hurt the union? What was going on there?
I think that Caesar realized that he was in for one more very long haul of a hostile political climate, and that striking in the fields was not going to be effective. That as long as the act wasn't being...
That's good.
Okay, that was take four. Take five's next.
This is important.
That's the end of that camera roll 91. It's also the end of the sound roll.
Stand up.
And the end of take four. Bye-bye.